Hey everybody out there in Zoom land. My name is Claire Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, it's great to be here this evening. Thank you so much for asking me and having me. What a blessing. I got to drive up here with Sponsee. We got to spend some time together in the car. She got to read. And that to me is like the greatest blessing, is being able to share this beautiful experience that I have had, this gift that I've been given with another human being, right? Because without other human beings, it would be really hard to be here. It'd be probably pretty lonely. So, my sobriety date is March 13th of 2021. I have-ish a home group. I'm on the cusp of joining a new home group. I've taken a couple of weeks to go to the same meeting a couple of times. What happened is my life shifted a lot because I got sober, and as a lot of people in recovery have told me, especially women in my trusted network, when I was really struggling with the fact that, like, oh my gosh, I have not been able to make one home group meeting this month. And, you know, we come here to get sober and live our lives. And to me, it's really important to be of service to my home group. So I made the decision to leave, which was a home group that I had helped to start a year ago, for childcare on the south side of Richmond. And so I'm on the precipice of joining a new home group, which I'll talk about a little bit later. I have a sponsor. She knows my, she knows she is my sponsor. I talked to her this afternoon and we prayed together. That is something that I didn't do much of before I got here. And I'm really grateful that I have a sponsor that I can call and say, hey, can we say a prayer together? As she's on her way to her home group and I'm on my way to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I sponsor other women. That is a beautiful, bright blessing that I hold very dear to my heart. And I typically don't read from the book, but I wanted to read from today's daily meditation, which is one of the paragraphs that I adore in the big book. And that is, life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And that was from this morning. And so my job, my journey, my joy to share with you tonight is like what it was like, how I got here, and what it's like now. And I think that when we share our stories with each other, the hope is that we're able to touch each other's hearts. And that is the coolest thing about this program. It doesn't matter where I go or who I connect with, or what meeting I'm in, there is always some sort of ray of light that touches me when I'm well. And when I'm not well, I can sit in a meeting and be resentful the whole time. But the good news is that at almost 4 years, those resentments are a little bit less than they were when I got here. And I'll talk more about that. But I really am grateful to be here. I was born in central Illinois. And the part of my story that remains solid is that when I came out of the womb, I really was worried. I am a worrier. That is sort of how I operated in the world, concerned, worried, worried about you, worried about myself, worried about my parents, my brother. I had a friend once that told me, like, it seems like you worry to exist. And that really was like, my internal nervous system was just shaky a lot. But on the outside, I had a natural ability to make you think that I was something very different. I had my first drink when I was about 9. I come from an Irish Catholic family. It was not a big deal to have a drink. It was a grasshopper. I drank one. I was drunk under the table at 9. And that is really like how I drank. I was not an alcoholic at 9, but I really enjoyed like the sip, how it made me feel. And that, like, it was really fun. And I was this person. Like, this is the story of Claire. She's able to put on a mask and make you think that she's something that she's not because she hates what's on the inside. And alcohol really was the only thing that quieted that, like, nervous worry side of myself on the inside. So I utilized it to the max. I drank, probably had my first drunk by the time I was 13. And I went to private parochial school. So I was not exposed to a lot, but I went to a public high school. And the second I got to public high school, I was off to the races. And the big thing about me is, and that I've learned through recovery, is that I really care a lot about what you think about me, and how I am perceived. And I want to be included, and I want to be cool, and I want to be part of, and not different. And I knew sort of like on the inside, like something is really different about me on the inside. So I have to act a certain way to be in these groups that I want to be included in. And oftentimes, 9 times out of 10, throughout the arc of my long, long drinking career, that meant getting drunk and drinking and partying. So in high school, I got in with in crowd and drank. I got drunk when I was a freshman. I got drunk when I was a sophomore. And I think I caused my parents, who are from a different generation, like a fair amount of anxiety. I got into a lot of trouble. So I studied overseas my junior year of high school, and I lived in Brazil. And there are a couple of things that happened. It was a really pivotal time. The time that I spent in Brazil, two things happened. One, there's no drinking age. So I was able to drink and not be held accountable and have fun and party all night long, because they stay up and party really late and they dance and they do all these things that I'd never been exposed to. I did learn another language. I did get a lot of life experience. And in that life experience, I was exposed to a different spirituality than I had been raised with. I had been raised Catholic and was a very, I am a rule follower. And I don't like to get in trouble, even though I oftentimes find myself in trouble. But I always, when I sat in church, I always enjoyed the time of quiet prayer. But other than that, I found myself thinking, like, this really, something's wrong. I'm a horrible person. It's not jiving with me. Something's not clicking. Like, I didn't get the Catholic download, and what is wrong with me? So, in Brazil, I was exposed to the beauty of the ocean and the beauty of the trees and how incredibly spiritual that is, that there is this divine intelligence and this divine creator that has. You know, we are on this planet, and that to me, you know, is the greatest form of spiritual connection. And that little seed was planted when I lived in Brazil by some really incredible human beings that I met and was exposed to. And so that seed got planted, and I came home instead of, I love to tell this story, with a, most people come home from trips like that with like suitcase of souvenirs and gifts for the people that you love, and this is really great. Well, I came home with a suitcase full of alcohol. And everybody thought I was really cool, right? Like, oh, you are this. I mean, I was underage when I got back home, and I found a way my senior year of high school to augment the card that I had in Brazil to make it look like a driver's license. And I told the people in Champaign, Illinois that I was a four. I mean, the lies that I started to spin when I was in high school to be able to drink and to be the person that people went to get their alcohol. Yeah, it was dark. You know, that darkness was building inside of me at a young age. And I was not a great student. My parents were able to help get me into a university that my mom had gotten her master's at, and my dad had got his undergrad in, and I went off to Nebraska. And over the course of the first 2 years that I was there, I got into a fair amount of trouble. My parents dropped me off, and about 45 minutes later, I got a ticket for being a minor in possession of alcohol. That ticket landed me in front of a judge, and not even a year later, I was back in front of that same judge in Omaha, Nebraska, thinking that I was just going to get another ticket and another fine. And that judge decided to make an example out of me. And based on them making that example out of me, I went to jail for underage drinking because he had said the year before that he would throw me in jail, and he did. And I spent the night in jail, terrified. I wet myself. And my mom and dad bailed me out. And this is a pattern of, like, Claire gets into big trouble and Claire's parents, because they love and adore her, bail her out. And when I got back to campus, they said, hey, you have two choices here. You're either, like, you know, you're going to become an advocate for underage drinking and not drinking on campus, or we're going to ask you to leave. And I was like, see you guys later. That's not for me. So I went, my parents had moved to Eastern Tennessee at the time, and I took a year off. And that year off, really, I call the arc of my drinking career, it has some phases, right? And it's like baby, burgeoning, alcoholic, and, like, you know, becoming a real hardcore alcoholic. And then just at the bitter end, the last 10 years of, like, not prettiness. And so this is like my baby, burgeoning, alcoholic phase. I'm a year out of school. I have no responsibilities. I'm waiting tables. I'm following the Grateful Dead. I think that I've, like, been put on this planet to save other humans. I mean, the mental stories that I'm beginning to weave and tell myself when I'm drunk are pretty out there. And, you know, my mental health and the places that I went to are a big part of my story. I've had multiple breaks with reality. They never landed me in institutions, but they landed me in some pretty dark places. But this was when I, like, alcohol would let me tell myself these stories that I was bigger than, that I had all of these, you know, I could heal people, I could help people, I was put on this planet to do all these things. And it was a delusion. It was just the beginning of the delusion that I was beginning to tell myself that would grow and grow and grow over the arc of over 20 years of drinking. So after about a year, my mom and dad were like, what are you doing? So I decided to go back to school. My mom was teaching in East Tennessee. I went back to school at UT. I was able to graduate. I got some decent grades. But really, those other 2 years were really about drinking and partying. And I did meet some really great human beings. And those human beings are another part of, like, this seed story that I like to talk about, which these tiny seeds that get planted that once you get here, start to come alive and end up being the things that, like, saved you, but you didn't even know it. And they were planted like 20 years before and you had no idea. So the spirituality piece, and then these humans, right? There were a few humans, and they are still, a couple of them are still my closest friends, my tribe. And it's like over half my life ago, 25 years ago. So we all decided when we graduated that we wanted to move someplace together. And I said, I'm going to San Francisco, because every true hippie child needs to live in San Francisco. And I was going, and I got, you know, I didn't take along any hostages, but I took along good friends. And we went out to San Francisco. And San Francisco was another place where, like, I really, my mind became illuminated. And it was, there were some outside substances happening that helped with the illumination, and all that, that's a part of my story. And also, there was a part of my spiritual life that I had moved out there to study with a collective of a group of neo-pagans that lived out in San Francisco. And I started to enhance my spiritual life. And alongside that, at the same time, I started to enhance my alcoholism. And what happened was the alcoholism started taking over and the scales started tipping. So the spiritual life, everybody thought that I was something that I was not, and the alcohol was a way that I could mask, like, how much I hated myself, that I wasn't being true to myself or true to my path. And I met a beautiful human being while I was out in San Francisco, and she was the love of my life at that time, and she was diagnosed with a fatal brain tumor at a very young age. And at this point in time, I told myself that I was going to be able to save her. Like, that's how much my alcoholism was ticking up. Like, I'm going to be able to, like, if I can help and I can take care of her, we're going to beat this thing. Even though she had been given, like, you have a year to live. And what ended up happening is that the more that I realized that I could not help her, the more I drank. And the more I brought in some more outside substances, and the more I lacked any, like, link to reality. And that landed me out in the middle of the Black Rock Desert at a festival where I really did lose my mind. And I walked away from that partner. It wasn't that I turned my back on her. It just was that I could not do it anymore. I knew that there was nothing I was going to be able to do to help her. And I sort of started wandering the southwest of the United States of America. And I was with people that I didn't know. I left my friends behind. I owed a lot of people a lot of things in San Francisco. That is what the nature of my disease will do. And I remember waking up in Sedona, Arizona, and, like, I'd probably been in some type of blackout for an extended period of time. I can't really tell you how long, but nobody knew where I was. My parents, my parents, my friends, and I didn't know what to do. And the One of the harder parts of my story is that I found myself in a situation where I was brutally attacked, because all, like, any sort of boundary or any sort of, like, thing that I could use to protect myself from any type of predator was, like, gone. It was me and alcohol, and everybody just, that was it. It was me and alcohol, and the thoughts would quiet down when I drank, and then if I stopped drinking, the thoughts would come back. So, after that assault, I reached out to my parents, who helped me, like, find my way back to San Francisco, and I got on a plane and came to very near here. We were talking before the meeting. My mom was teaching at UVA at the time, and they lived in Keswick, and I really did not have a lot of mental faculties. I remember my parents picking me up, and they picked me up in Dulles, and the look on my parents' faces when they saw me. Yeah, those are the moments that you don't forget. I think they were terrified. They were relieved. And what they saw, like, what got off the plane, was literally like a shadow of their child. And what that time in this area provided me was extensive mental health care. My mom had me go 2 times a week to talk to a mental health care professional. I lied the whole time. I was still drinking while I was here. Like, I was not ready to put the bottle down. It still made me feel too good. It still allowed me to hide. And I still got to wear the mask of like, you know, this brilliant human being who's, you know, you're lucky to be around her. And so, my alcoholism started ticking back up, and my partner, was on the cusp of passing away. And I found a way to get back to San Francisco. And I moved back to San Francisco. I think my parents were just like, we don't even know what to do. And I got back to see Danielle before she died. And by the grace of the goddess, she forgave me. That is like another really big gift that I was given in this life that I really probably did not deserve at the time. Because without that, I think I would have walked around with a lot more self-hatred than I already had. But I remember after her service, like I made the conscious choice to drink. I remember like looking at a bottle of wine and saying, like, I am going to cross over. Like, I am on the precipice and I'm just going to cross over because I don't want to live and it would just be easier to die. And I was not even 30 years old. But I am a hard worker. And when I put my nose to the grindstone, I can accomplish some things. And I got a job with a good company. Where I actually was able to work from the ground up. And then when I worked from the ground up, I was able to travel around the country. And for those of us, I think, that know who are alcoholics and have these jobs that provide us these opportunities to travel around, it was like, it was just a gold mine for me. I was moving around every 12 weeks. I was living out of a couple of suitcases. I mean, I had my stuff like in Colorado, I think, in my aunt's basement, but I would just travel around and open new store and open a new store and open a new store. And like the drinking would just go from like 0 to 90. But somehow I was able to like accomplish daily tasks. That was then. And during this time, I met a human being that I believed was like my soulmate, and we got married. And he was in the same industry that I was in, and I wanted to have kids, and he was questioning the kids, and so we tried really hard to have kids, and we were able to have a child. I have a 10 and a 13-year-old now, 10 next Sunday. But we were able to have our first daughter, and we were living in Asheville, North Carolina. And those 9 months that I was pregnant with my first daughter were the only 9 months over the span of a really long time that I ever really like put together any type of sobriety. I did it for my daughter. But the second she came, I picked right back up where I had left off, and I was like immediately drinking like to the level, if not more, than where I had been before. And this is a theme that we talk about a lot in sobriety, which is you can put it down for a while, and then when you pick it back up, it's a lot worse really quickly than it was before. So I'm like walking around with a stroller in my neighborhood with a six pack of beer, you know, and doing things that, you know, when I think about it today, it is part of my story. It doesn't make it as sad as it made me, when I first got here, because I work every day to make a living amends to my children, and to how I showed up as a mom. And by the grace of the goddess, my 13-year-old claims to not remember drinking mom. My 10-year-old, I don't really think. Well, I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But yeah, I had a lot of shame around that. And I think as moms here in recovery, it's really important that we support and love each other. There are moms who have kids and their kids have never seen them. I have so many wonderful sisters in recovery right now that have had babies, and they're like, their kids, they've been sober the whole time. And that is like, oh my God, it fills my heart with such joy. That's not my story. And I think it's important that we support, that women support women, and we don't brutalize ourselves, because we do that enough as it is. it says in the book that my sponsee and I are reading, the little red book for women, we're reading it on the way up here. It talks a lot about women and how we become sleepwalkers during the time that we drink, and that when we get sober, we wake up. And for me, that is very much part of my story. Like, I was asleep and unaware for a very, very, very long time. And so I don't know if, like, my husband at the time was like, I don't think this human can handle another baby, or what it was, but we were able to get pregnant with our second daughter, and he was from Richmond, and we decided to move to Richmond because his family is from here. And we had found out when my daughter was in the belly that she was missing her left hand. And they told us she was going to have a lot of neurological stuff going on. So it just felt like we were going to need more support than what we had in Asheville. So we moved to Richmond 10, almost 10, my daughter, my youngest, was born there. So 10 years ago. And she came and everything was fine. I will tell you that that pregnancy, I did not make it the whole 9 months. At the end, I was drinking, you know, glasses of red wine here and there, because I told myself that that was okay. But as soon as my daughter came, we woke up and we were newly moved, and it was winter time. And I found myself in a neighborhood that was filled with people that drank just like me. And I told myself another story, and I went inside another massive delusion, that, like, okay, so 10, so that lasted for a solid 6 years, which was, there's no way I would end up in a neighborhood like this with people that drink like me if I was an alcoholic. And so I told myself I wasn't an alcoholic, even though ticking in the back of my mind all the time, especially when I tried to go to sleep, was this voice that said, you're an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic. And I would say, I'm not like that. I'm not like that. I'm not like that. I'm not like that. And I would talk about other people and this new friend group that I had, and what alcohol, you know, my God, they drink so much. And yet I was around them because they drank like me. And it really, you know, I gave up my career to stay home with my kids, and, the drinking just took on new measures. My husband at the time traveled for work. So it was really me at home raising the girls and drinking the way I wanted to, how I wanted to. But the outer world saw a different Claire. She was president of the PTA. She was highly involved. She was volunteering. Like, I don't, you know, what I love to talk about is how incredibly tired I was the second I got here on March 13th. Like, I had nothing left in me. The gas tank was completely empty because I had been holding this facade of who I truly wasn't, and just drinking, like, the real me away over time. And so COVID happened. I did get sober during COVID. So it's always important for me to, like, honor the folks on Zoom. I still do a fair amount of Zoom meetings, because I think I wouldn't be here if it weren't for that vehicle. And COVID hit, my world got smaller, and the drinking got bigger because everybody was drinking all the time, especially in the neighborhood that I lived in. And what I will say is that on March 12th, I was in a blackout. I have no idea what happened. I had some type of verbal altercation with my then 9-year-old, of which she claims she doesn't know what happened. But when I woke up the next morning, I knew it was really bad. I mean, there had been a series of me leaving my car. Like, this is how bad it was. I'd leave my car places and not know where it was. I'd take out the same mailbox like 6 or 7 times. People would see me coming at a party and they'd walk the other way. You know, my ex would be like, you really need to, like, pump the brakes. And I'd, like, really try and pump the brakes. In January of 2013, I tried to make it 30 days, and I made it 27, and it was awful. I had to use other substances to help me get through. And I'll tell you, when I did stop drinking, my oldest wouldn't drive with me. She was too afraid to drive with me. She didn't trust me. So whether or not she knows or remembers what happened on that night, I still don't know. I've not been told. But I knew when I woke up that next morning, I was in a lot of, I had to make a change. The cops had been at our front door. I had a warrant out for my arrest for a warrant in debt. I had run up a credit card buying alcohol that my husband at the time knew nothing about. And they sent the cops to our house because I didn't pay the credit card because I had no money to pay the credit card. And it was hidden. I mean, that's how deluded I was. I thought I was going to get away with it. So the only thing I knew was like, perhaps maybe AA could help me. And my husband at the time had gone around. I was on the phone with my brother on a Sunday morning, and he had found all my stashes all around the house. I mean, they were everywhere. Every place you could think of to stash alcohol, I was stashing it. He threw it all away, was pulling out of the driveway. And I said, "Where are you going?" And he said, "I don't know. I found everything. Like, I can't." I knew I was either going to rehab or I had to make a choice. And we have choices here. That's the great thing about AA. We were talking on the way up here. Like, what Alcoholics Anonymous has shown me is that I have a choice. I have a choice to not drink. And I had a choice from the very moment that I got here. And what I did was I reached out to my cousin who was 20 years sober. He connected me with a woman in Colorado, and that woman helped me for a couple of days. And on that same day, I reached out to a woman that I thought was sober in Richmond, and she was. And she met me at an online meeting on that Monday. And like I said, I'm a rule follower. And if somebody tells me to do something, I'm going to do it. And I didn't want to die anymore. For some reason, on that morning, on March 13th, I just didn't want to die anymore. I wanted to live for my kids. I had a doctor ask me this week, "Why did you get sober?" I've never had a doctor ask me that before. And I said, initially, honestly, it was for my children. I wanted to be able to be a mom to my kids. And so what I did was by the end of 7 days, I had a sponsor and I did whatever that sponsor told me to do. And we hit the big book really hard. Because it was COVID, she could come to my backyard and we were able to read 2 times a week. And at the time I was a stay-at-home mom, and, we just every Tuesday and every Thursday, or sometimes we changed it up, she would come to my backyard. We would sit on my picnic table and we would read. And I had no idea what she was talking about. And this, I mean, she gave me, you know, the bigger print, because I couldn't really, my brain was so off. I couldn't read as well as I used to be able to read. Like, everything was jumbled upstairs in my brain. But somehow, through the grace of the goddess, like, I started to believe that there was hope again. And when she talked to me about spirituality and I heard the word God, and, you know, I was like, well, I don't think this is for me. I don't think I can stay because I am pagan and I believe in I'm an earth-based spiritual being. I believe in the divine feminine and the divine masculine. I believe in a creator. Like, I believe in all the things, and I don't think they do that at AA. I think they only do God, right? And that is just not true. It is, you know, it is a higher power of your understanding. And if that hadn't been the case when I got here, and if someone hadn't let me know that, I wouldn't have stayed. And the good news is that, like, over time, even though I didn't understand what she was reading to me, there were bits and pieces that I underlined that really spoke to my soul. This is a soul spiritual program. And you know, I'm good at checking some boxes. We were talking about checking boxes, and because I'm task driven. And so, you know, at the end of 9 months, I had completed what I thought were the tasks of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was feeling better and I was staying sober. And it still got pretty crunchy a lot, like, you know, and I had given a fifth step. And on that fifth step with my first sponsor, I lied. And so this is the other big thing that I've learned here in sobriety is that, you know, if given the chance, Claire is going to lie coming out the gate. Like, I am a liar. I am dishonest. I don't want you to know like what's really truly going on inside of me. So I lied. My sponsor at the time said, hey, I want to ask you, are you gay? And I was like, no. And then she said, do you want to stay married? And I was like, yes. And like, even though inside of my being, and I'm having this spiritual experience with my sponsor at the time, I know it's the complete opposite of what I'm telling her. And I sold myself that story. And I was able to feel okay for a little while longer, until about 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, I just realized that I was still very, I remember my husband at the time said, you are not drinking, but you seem very unhappy. And I was, because I wasn't being true to myself or to who I am. And I decided to get honest, and I got very honest. And I will say, the way that I left the marriage, was very alcoholic. I just like made a decision and did it. I didn't think about the consequences of those choices or my actions. But I also needed to get out. It was not healthy. It was not, a place where I could be who I truly was. And you know, I suffered some consequences inside of sobriety. I lost my sponsor, because I made a choice in early recovery that was not supported by her. And, I found myself like out in, it felt like I was out in the ether, but I knew that like, I've stayed sober a couple of years. I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to stay sober. And unfortunately, the way things rolled, for some time, I did not have access to my kids for a period of time, the way that I do now. This is one of these gifts of the program, but I realized that I needed to go back through the steps and get honest again, because what was beginning to happen was that my spiritual life was beginning to enhance to a place that I never dreamed possible, because I was getting more honest with myself and the people around me, and I was staying sober. And I was continuing to give back to the program even during the hardest time of my life. Like, I was in a place of complete surrender. And I mean, this is something that I still struggle with to this day. Like, I do still struggle with giving the whole thing over to my higher power. Like, I oftentimes have to visualize, like, there's this thing that's in front of me that I'm struggling with, and I have to visualize just giving the whole thing away. Because otherwise I'm going to go crazy. And it really is, surrender truly is the gift of freedom. Because when you give the whole thing over, and say, like, you are humble enough to say, hey, this is not me. If I am connected to my higher power has this whole thing. All I have to do is take my hands off the wheel and just show up. And when you simply show up, there's so many gifts on the other side, but it does not come, you know, I'm not here to stand up and say, like, hey, I got sober and I've done everything perfectly. That is far from the truth. Like I said before, I'm in living amends every day to my kids. And it is literally just now that I am beginning to have any semblance of any type of relationship after 2 years with my 13-year-old. There was a year where she barely spoke to me and didn't want to be around me. The 10-year-old is like a ray of sunshine and light, and like everything's unicorns and rainbows. But that was the hardest thing for me, because I wanted to be a mom, and like, my daughter didn't want me as a mom. And it wasn't about the drinking. It was how I was showing up as a human being. And, you know, what I'm learning now, as I'm, you know, going towards 4 years, is like the emotional sobriety that is required. The work around the emotional sobriety, the practice around the emotional sobriety can sometimes make your hair stand on end. I have been working with a sponsee that that came in at like when I was 9 months sober, and she just got 3 years. And like that to me is where the sweet spot of this program is at, is that we have like grown up together inside of these 3 years and stayed sober together. And it really was an a divine alignment of timing when I got connected with the women that I now work with. You know, a divine alignment of timing when I came in. I would love to say that I, you know, got sober when I was young. Not true. I'm 50. And, you know, I'm looking at this next phase of my life with a lens that I've never had before. Because I'm being true to myself, I'm being honest with myself, and I am doing the work that's required to show up as a loving, kind, tender human being that I know that the universe meant me to be. I spent a lot of time pretending that I was that person, but hating myself on the inside. And, you know, I had zero self-confidence when I got here. I didn't think I was worthy of anything. I didn't think I could ever hold a job again. I thought all I was good for was like to raise these two kids, and I really botched that one up. And what other women in this program and friends in recovery have taught me is like, it's never too late. You can always begin again, again and again, and you're going to be okay again and again. And like for me, because of the nature of my disease, I oftentimes have to wake up in the morning and say thank you, like before my feet even hit the ground. Because if I don't, other voices will take over. So it's when I find myself living in the present moment and living a life of deep gratitude, I tend to have some good times. And then in recovery, also about a year ago, I had another deep mental health crisis. So, like, I'm not going to come here and tell you that everything gets rosy. I had another deep mental crisis. And what happened was this time, the people in recovery who were part of my network came and they held me up and they helped me. And they helped me move literally my physical things. And they got my things settled in a place where I could actually be with my kids, like in a real way for the first time. And that little seed was able to help me start rebuilding my relationship with my kids. And like I said, it's not, you know, every mom dreams of like their kids loving on them. It's not like that for me right now. But I do have hope that one day it may be. That's why I know every day it's really important for me to show up sober. And my children know, like, okay, this was my mom before, and this is what my mom does now. They know I live a program that takes up a lot of time, and it does take away oftentimes from my time with them. Like I left today, their dad was picking them up at 5:30. I had to leave early, and like they know, like I am driving to go be of service to this gift that gave me my life back and that gave them their mom back. You know, and there are tools, I'm kind of all over the place, but there are tools that I use on a daily basis. And one of the most important tools that I use on a daily basis is taking my inventory regularly. So like I haven't talked about the steps in a like a natural and cohesive way, but like this is Claire and this is what you get. You know, every night I do a nightly inventory, and at this point I'm sharing it with my sponsor and a sponsee sister. I share it with sponsees, and I share it, you know, with friend that I've just met recently. Like it is important to be able to put down on paper for me every night what's happened in my day. If I don't, I'm going to lie about it. I know this about myself. And if I cannot make right something that I have done wrong during the day, I'm going to amend it first thing the next morning. I know if I don't do this, or if I don't call my sponsor and I don't talk about it because I am in early recovery, I'm in trouble. It's like a real slippery slope. And I am the kind of alcoholic that really needs to consistently be in inventory and processing and talking about things, because it's by getting it out that I and having relationships with people that don't judge me that I'm like, okay, it's going to be okay. I'm massively codependent. I had no idea I was. And I have, I do work a sister program of recovery that is very important for my recovery, to not to be able to address my alcoholism, but to also address my codependency, and to know that like I am worthy of taking care of myself and having boundaries with people, and for standing up for myself. That is something I was never really good at. And like standing up for yourself doesn't have to be like with your fists on your hips like I was for most of my life. Like it can be very gentle and very loving. And that is another thing that I have been studying with a coach from another modality, which is my voice and how I use it. And that, I didn't use my voice for a really long time and was very silent and hid. And then when I got sober, the voice kind of got loud. Like I remember, like one of the voices was, I want a divorce. Like I, like loud. And now I'm learning to use my voice as a tool for good and for kindness and to be of service. Like the whole helping others thing to me, like it's why I stay, because life out there in the world is really complex and hard, and relationships are very dynamic and hard. And the cool thing is that they're just not hard in here. So we can learn, like, this is the perfect playground for learning to grow and to experience and to get better, right, than we ever dreamed possible. The friendships that I have in recovery are unlike any that I've had. I still have a tribe out in California, and that tribe also rescued me a year ago when I needed help and I couldn't keep my feet on the ground. And I didn't know 25 years ago that they were going to play a role 25 years down the road, but they did. They were part of like that seed planting process. And that is why I stay. And the gift that I've been given back with regards to my spiritual life, is I can't even talk about it. It is important for me when I say the thank you in the morning to also get up, depending upon the day, which nowadays is about 5 or 5:30 in the morning, and make sure that I have a few moments to myself to get connected with the divine and to really quiet my system, to give myself some grace and ease to start my day, because otherwise I'm off the rails from the get-go. And like Claire, off the rails still happens. And it oftentimes happens when I am not aligned. And so, I think when I first got here, it was waking up early and I woke up early anyway. And now like the clock has moved back so far. Sometimes I wonder, like, is it going to be 4 o'clock eventually? Like, is that how early it's going to have to be for me to get up to make sure that I'm right so I can show up the way that I am meant to? Not that I'm required to, that I am meant to. As a child of the light, we are all here as children of the light, children of God, children of the goddess, of the divine creator, however you call it. Like we've all been called here. And that is imperative to me. And I have like the thing that I do, and the thing that I do doesn't have to be the thing that you do, which is great. And I'm also the kind of alcoholic that has to do it throughout the day. Like I don't just get to check that box in the morning and like, oh, I'm great for the rest of the day. Oftentimes I spend a lot of time in the car. And nowadays there's nothing playing in the car. It's just me and a dialogue. Sometimes it's with the divine creator, and sometimes it's the voice spinning over and over. And if the voice is kicking up, I pick up the phone. I talk on the phone a lot. Yesterday, I think I talked on the phone Saturday morning, for 70 minutes with three different people. Because like a lot of stuff had kicked up over the week, and that's just what I need to do to reset the clock. That's the other thing when I talk about being okay, and again, like you can reset this thing anytime, anywhere, any place. It does not matter what's happened. And if it weren't for having the ability to reset, I would not be here. I have really been struggling with the fact that I wasn't able to show up for my home group in the month of November. And it was really hard for me to say, this isn't working anymore. You know, there have just been so many shifts inside of early recovery. And I am a person that's like, I'm going to tell myself, I'm not a good AA. I'm not a good sponsor. You know, I'm not doing it right. It seems like everybody else is doing it different than me. And really, I'm just doing it the way the goddess meant me to. And so I listened to my sponsor and she said, stay put, stay put. It's going to be okay. And then finally, it was like, hey, you need to find a new home group. You haven't been able to go in a month. And that was really hard for me because we built this home group based on having childcare, which was really important to me. And to let that go was really hard. And also I know like women in my home group were like, you tell us where you're going to be. We'll come meet you. It's going to be okay. And I know that if I'm working my program, I'm going to stay connected with those women regardless. So that is like the most recent journey that has been hard for me to not sell myself the story that like I'm a good AA and I am a good human being. And I spent enough of my life and enough of this lifetime working very hard to tell myself another story. And I was really afraid to be able to try and help or be a sober sister to humans that had relapsed because I worry about relapsing because I know if I go back out again, I'm like, I'm donezo. I was so bad when I got here. I'm like, I am donezo. And I have been talking with a woman who has not been able to stay sober and has not been able to put days together. And it has been literally one of the most beautiful things because what she's shown me is compassion, which is something that like before I got here, I would have told you, oh, I'm the most compassionate, kind human being in the world, but I wasn't. And now she is teaching, like, I believe that the goddess has sent her to me to learn compassion in a real way, like in a way that matters, that can like it can transcend all of the other things. And for someone like me, you know, in paganism, we talk about magic a lot. And what magic is an all chemical transformation. It's about changing one thing to another. And that is actually what this program is. I, for someone who thought that there wouldn't be a place for me here, like this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. There's no doubt about it that like working this whole time, you know, when I have a hard time and I'm like wondering about the choices that I'm making, if I can write my mind and quiet myself enough and pause enough, I know like, it's okay. It's not, I don't have to be in control of anything. All I have to do is like, be happy, love other people, show up, have a good time, right? Laugh, have joy. And all of those other things will come and will be beautiful. So, I mean, I think I like did like some sort of like zigzag figure eight around like all of the things, but I know that whatever was happening here tonight, it really wasn't me. All I had to do was like get in the car and drive and hang out with a beautiful human being. And I'm so grateful to be here. My mouth is like super dry. I haven't had enough water. So I'm like, it's 5 minutes early, but like, I think I'm going to stop. And thank you so much for having me. Thank you.